I'm always all in the open, so there are no skeletons in my closet. Everybody knows everything about my life and about me. This makes it a lot easier to get on with the joy of living rather than hiding the past. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you the instant inspiration. I'm always open to all, so there are no skeletons in my closet. Everybody knows everything about me and my life. This makes it a lot easier to get on with the joy of living rather than hiding the past. And you say, you, Herb, you have no skeletons in your closet. You have no past life that you would rather not face. You have no past experiences that you wouldn't like the world to know about. No. Every experience that I have in the past, the world knows about it. If they didn't find out about it one way, I told them. Because I don't keep secrets. I don't have any shades in my bedroom, in my house. I have a one-room house. And I have three big sliding glass doors. And I do have a thing that can cover it only to keep the sun out in the heat of the day. But otherwise, it's always open. All night long, it's wide open. Anybody can walk around my house and look in and see this naked man sitting in there working and think to themselves, well, that's interesting, you know. But no, whenever we try to hide things, whenever we try to pretend that certain things didn't happen to us, if you went to jail, if you had a very dear friend, someone came up to him and said, you've had five wives. And he said, yes, that's true. Oh, he thought he was, bringing up something that wasn't known publicly. Yes, I did. I had five very beautiful ladies in my life, and we had beautiful marriages, and we each decided to go on our way. But five marriages, what's your problem? What's your problem? They're all legal. They're all proper. And then we talk to our friends in Nigeria and Ghana, and they say, yeah, I got five wives. Five wives? My goodness, how do you keep them sorted out? Well, we're just a big, happy family. We all know who is the lead wife, who's in charge, and everybody else takes their place. Now, if there's anybody who doesn't want it, they can leave. But everybody likes it because they love me. I'm such a wonderful husband. And people just love to be with me. And so, well, different cultures allow for those things, and that's okay. Now, it just so happens this person is a Christian living in a Muslim community that Muslim laws prevail, and so he's getting the, so to speak, best of two worlds. Like the Mormons, you know, they would have loved to have lots of wives, but the United States government says, hey, in the United States, we don't have that as part of our program. And you know why we don't have that as part of our program in the United States? Because you Mormons were just too slow coming up. If you'd been here when George Washington and the gang were putting in the rules, you could have put in the rule that a man can have as many wives as he wants. You know? And then it would have been in the United States Constitution, no problem. You know? And it's wonderful. But you see, Johnny come lately. You know? So this oftentimes happens. It doesn't mean that Mormonism is good or bad. It doesn't mean Christianity is good or bad, or any philosophy is good or bad. It only means, what is it that you believe and that you follow? On the Dalai prayer this morning, I said, if you are a Catholic, be a good one. If you're a Christian in any way, be a good one. Protestant, whatever it is you are, be good. If you're going to be a Hindu or something, be good. When you're the very best, then pretty soon you're not Hindu anymore. You're not Catholic. You're not Protestant. You just are spiritually illumined. And I think that's pretty nice. There are no ties to a spiritually illumined person. You cannot say to a spiritually illumined person, oh, you're a Hindu. He says, what made you think that? Well, the color of your skin and the place where you come from and the background that you had. Well, what makes you think that? Well, some of the things you say the Hindus teach, well, that may well be. But I also teach something of the Christians, and I teach something of the Zarathustrans, and I teach something of many, many other, you know. I am not just limited to what I was. We have a letter here, and it's from a young man who's 34 and who's starting the course, and he said, I had a religious upbringing, but it never stirred my soul. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what happens to many of us. Mm-hmm. We have religious upbringing, but it doesn't stir our soul. It doesn't make us come alive. And it does make us come alive because it's somebody else's religion. It's not something we have made ours. Now, in this particular person, he had lost his parents early in his life, and he was in an orphanage, and a lovely family came and took him out of the orphanage and made him one of their own children. And they raised him with their values. And he was so pleased to have someone care about him that he took whatever they said. But then by the time he was 16, you know what happens when you're 16? You get a mind of your own. When he was 16, he decided, hey, I got to go do my own thing. Nothing against the parents, whether they had been his natural parents or not. Nothing against anybody. He just had to do his own thing. So you see, now you might say, that's a skeleton in his closet. Oh my goodness, how terrible. Yes, I think if we want to look at skeletons and closets, we might start out with Jesus the Christ. He had a lot of skeletons in his closet. A lot of skeletons. He's of the house of Joseph. And the house of Joseph wasn't all that wonderful, you know. They had a lot of shenanigans going on there. And if you look at the man, Jesus, the man who demonstrated the Christ so beautifully, you don't look at this background. You don't need to say he's the house of David. You don't need to say his mother came and said, Jesus, come, I want to talk with you. Your brothers and sisters and I want to talk with you. And Jesus said, not in person, but he sent someone out to tell him, look, those who follow my teaching, they are my family. They are my mother. They are my brethren, my brethren, my mother-in, you know, whatever. And that's true. Now that's terribly disrespectful from many points of view, that you'd tell your own mother to get lost, you know, when you are preaching in the synagogue and you say to the, tell her to get lost. She's not following what I'm teaching. But you see, there we don't listen. Now, that could be a skeleton in the closet, but there's nothing wrong with it. His mother was doing what she believed. His brothers and sisters did what they believed. And do you think that they could believe that their own brother and their own son could be a spiritual illumined master? That would be a strange day in Hades if that ever came about. Because one of our own family being someone fabulous, we cannot come to that point of view. And the reason we can't come to it is because we all came out of the same parking place, you know. And because of that, we feel that then we should be that way too. Or how can they be that way and we're not that way? You see, judgment is a terrible thing. And that goes for the skeletons in the closet. If you go around looking for people's skeletons in their closet, have fun. They're not really hidden very well because a skeleton in a closet is quite obvious. If you go around looking for people's faults, you'll find them. However, if you go around looking for people's beauty, joy, peace, harmony, love, right action, truth, wholeness, you'll find that too. If you go around looking for a teacher who is sharing beautiful teachings, but you were a crook before, you were robbing banks, now you're teaching, you know, honesty and integrity. Hey, I got the message. I changed my way. Am I allowed to do that? Am I going to be held responsible for what I did before when I didn't have the message? Now I got the message. And you see, we all rise out of whatever experiences we have. And like the phoenix, we come forth with the beauty of our soul. And this is what I would have each one of us do. Come forth with the beauty of our soul. And not be worried about the skeletons in our closet or anybody else's. Because if you want them, excuse me, if you want them, they're very much there. You can have them all you like. They're very much there. Everybody's got them. Some ones that you wouldn't think were very nice, and other ones that you wouldn't think were nice either, but they weren't as bad as the other was nice, you know. So, think about these things. Think about these things. When you go to Jesus, and he teaches you how to heal, and you walk away healed, are you going to say, but you were a sinner? You know, you're... what was Jesus in the eyes of one group of people? In the eyes of one group of people, Jesus was nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. He was the bottom of the barrel. He was the rottenest, rottenest, rotten. They wanted to kill him. Remember? Mm-hmm. You remember? Mm-hmm. The Jews hated him. The Jews hated him because he was living and teaching what they should have been living and teaching. And he was making it hard on the teachers and the priests and the rabbis, because with that example before them, they would have to come forth too and be as beautiful. And so you get rid of the problem. And they got rid of the problem. Now, would you say that he was a criminal? Well, he certainly was. The court found him guilty, even though Pontius Pilate didn't find him with any fault, but they still allowed him to be hung. And I mean, how much more guilty can you let him be? So there he was. And in the eyes of you and I and the world now, do we see him as a ugly, guilty person? No. We see him as a spiritual master who was showing the way to all humanity to find their own inner self. And what a glorious work that was. And in the process, he got bumped off. And that's okay. He did his job very well. But you see, what he did best is not what he taught, but what he created to follow him. Peter, who was supposed to be that big old rock and so beautiful, turned out to be a schnuck, you know. He didn't really accomplish anything of merit. And the person who was against him the most, the person who was on top of his back all the time, wanted to knock him down, Saul, he ended up as the supporter, the carrier of the message. And he even went to Peter after he had his conversion into Paul. He went to Peter and he said, Pete, let's work together. You know, we have a wonderful message here. And Peter says, look, I am taking this side of the Mediterranean. You take the other side. You get out of town. This is my show. That's what he said. And so Paul went to take over the other side. And he did a beautiful job. And his writings are extant today. Now, I don't know of anything that has Peter's name on it.
Mm-mm, that's interesting.
Hmm? Yeah. And yet Peter was the rock from which it was formed. And all of the names of the other disciples, they were really not on those books, because they were written so many years afterwards. And they were just convenient names to put on them. You know, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, and so forth. That was great. But they were not the real Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. The only real one was Paul. And he wasn't too cool all the way. He had a lot of hang-ups. But regardless, with all his hang-ups, he kept foremost in his mind the Christ. And without him, we wouldn't have the Christ today. So, good old Paul. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. Yeah. Go look in his closet. You find lots of skeletons, I tell you. Quite a guy. Okay. I'm always open. I am always open in the open. I am always all in the open, so there are no skeletons in my closet. Everybody knows everything about me and my life. This makes it a lot easier to get on with the joy of living rather than hiding the past. So, join me getting on with living and being born new this instant to who we are, the divine. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.